Welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast. We are on episode 22. I'm Tara Henry, joined by Rhiannon Potke. Rhi, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. We're a week closer to, fingers crossed, getting some games in. Just the closer we get, the more excited I get. And seeing a lot of these, you know, schedules get finalized and polls get put out and everything just gets us really excited and gets you kind of in the mood. And, you know, there's still stuff going on, obviously, in our world right now, but it's kind of fun to dream ahead and think about, you know, hearing that bat and hearing the first pitch thrown.
Yeah, they had some polls released this week. We had the USA ESPN poll, and then we had the NFCA poll as well. So polls are starting to come out a little bit different than our D1 softball poll, but I think that's what makes our sport great. You've got different perspective from all across the country. I did notice that Alabama is 8 in all of those polls. So Alabama is sitting at that lucky 8. I wonder what that's all about. What do you think, Bree?
I don't know. They love that number. So I think they're glad everyone picked him at 8. We'll see. That had some good things for them the last time that happened.
Yeah. And we had schedules that were released. They're rolling out. Rhi, what are you seeing in terms of schedules? Anything catch your eye that you've come across the past week in terms of scheduling?
Yeah, they're starting to trickle out, right? I mean, a lot of, you know, I think one that I saw, I think yesterday get released, we're taping this on a Tuesday, yesterday was Louisiana get released. And no surprise. I mean, they obviously, their non-conference is always strong because they want to get as many, you know, being at their conference, the Sun Belt's not quite as strong. They want to get some RPI wins under the belt. And obviously, you know, grain of salt, these are all things that are subject to change, as we've seen. But, you know, they've got like Baylor, Auburn, they've got LSU on their schedule, Oklahoma State. They have a series. They go April 24th and 25th at Alabama. It's, you know, they got Texas for a doubleheader in March. So really, really strong schedule, which is what they had last year as well. And, you know, Jerry Glasgow is really high on that team. And they've got a lot of depth, some transfers in as usual. So just excited to see that schedule come out. I know NC State released theirs today. So we're seeing some teams announce like their non-conference portion, and then still have some conferences we're waiting on finalization, like Pac-12 and Big Ten and Big 12. But we know they kind of have the plans firmed out. It's just getting that schedule out to see who's playing who and when.
Yeah, Louisiana last year they had the number one ranked RPI, so that's no surprise that their schedule is just as tough as it was last year. And like you said, they've got the transfer Sierra Bryan out of Georgia. And of course, Summer Ellison in the circle there at Louisiana. We also had some other news today. The Oklahoma Sooners received a big donation. Rhi, tell me a little bit about this donation that Oklahoma softball received today.
Yeah, they received two donations that are going to go towards they're very generous gifts that will impact the, it says, you know, the championship pursuit of current and future student athletes. So, but one of the major gifts was $500,000 from a family in Houston, Texas. The other one was, there was no amount listed, but it was Mike and Robin Batson, which is a lovely name, Batson, for a softball donation from Broken Bow, Oklahoma, which is one of my favorite named cities too. I love Broken Bow. So yeah, I mean, just the one donation alone is 500,000. So whatever the other one is, it's a large amount. And I think I always say this every time I see this, invest in women's sports. I love to see it. So it's really cool to see that sort of investment. And we know Oklahoma is a program that, you know, really does value their women's sports there, especially softball. So let's get, you know, let's get some other people listening to this. If you got some extra 500,000 laying around, I don't, but if you do, donate it to your local softball organization. There's a lot of women that could use that money to better their programs and themselves. So that was some lovely news today, because I always love seeing these investments in women's sports.
Yeah, it's great to see. So those Oklahoma Sooners received a big gift, and like Rhi said, invest in women's sports. And this week, we're going to be releasing our preseason All-Americans. Stay tuned for that on the site. That will be up shortly. This was tough to do just because we had that short season. We have a couple players working through injuries. But just going back and looking at some of these numbers that some of these players put up, I'm really excited for us to get this preseason All-Americans put out there. Bree, any thoughts in terms of All-Americans, preseason All-Americans?
Yeah, no, it's always tough. I mean, you know, you're kind of, and I know coaches sometimes don't like the preseason stuff. I like it, but I don't, because you're kind of, it's a kind of a projector and based on older results. So it's kind of, you're stuck in between, but it's a good way to kind of just give some idea of like who's coming back and some of the big names. And it's just really hard though. I mean, to narrow it to, we kept it to first and second team, and we easily could have filled a third team, and a lot of the third team and second teams could have been first and second. And it we try to keep it a true team too. So that's always hard because some positions are more stocked than others. And as you said, last year was kind of different because we didn't get into conference play, which really starts to make those numbers be a little bit more true to themselves. But I think, you know, it was a fun endeavor, and there's a lot of good names in there. It just makes you excited to see the talent we have coming back for this next, for this upcoming season. And I'm sure they'll change by the end. That's always the cool thing, is someone always emerges. And some were in, like you said, injured last year that, you know, they just got to kind of earn it back. It's not that we don't think they're good. It's just that we have to, like, we can't just give it to them by reputation alone.
Yeah. So stay tuned for the D1 softball preseason All-Americans on D1softball.com. I believe that's the news for the week. Kind of a short and sweet news week. We are on a Tuesday here, but Bree, please introduce our very special guest of the week.
Yeah, we taped it early because we wanted to get this news in. It was over the weekend on Saturday night. University of Michigan paused all their athletics, every single sport. That means no practices, no games, nothing, for up to 14 days because of a new variant of the coronavirus that was found in athletes. So every program had to go into basically quarantine. And so called up Coach Hutch. She was in quarantine. I said, do you have a few minutes in quarantine? And she did. She was generous enough, which isn't surprising, to give us some time to tell us all about what's going on there, how they're dealing with it, and even give us some insight into her own career and, you know, her famous stint with the Lansing Lassies. So you're going to want to, this is a great interview. The news and then some perspective on just softball and her longevity in the sport. So I think you're all going to like it. So stay tuned. And we are grateful to be joined by Michigan head coach Carol Hutchins, Coach Hutch, as she's affectionately known by most players, in her 37th season at Michigan, basically the dean of softball in Division I, guided the Wolverines to an NCAA title, 21 Big Ten conference titles. You were already inducted in the Hall of Fame, so you're still coaching and you're a Hall of Famer, which is a rarity in a lot of sports. You and Arizona's Mike Candre are tugging right back and forth for that career winningest coach, right? I think you're at 1,631 wins and only 525 losses and 5 ties, which is amazing. You guys are kind of going back and forth there. So the reason we had you on, other than the fact we've wanted to have you on for a long time and discuss a lot of things, but there's some news this week that came out over on Saturday. We're taping this on a Monday with Coach Hutch. We wanted to get the update right away. Saturday night, we learned that Michigan Athletics has put all the athletics on campus on at least 14-day pause. This came because of an order from the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services decision. It includes all games, team, and individual training sessions, which obviously is practices, which you guys are in the middle of gearing up for this start of, this COVID-affected softball season. Coach, what can you tell us about kind of how you heard about it and how it's impacted your program so far?
Well, our athletic director reached out Saturday night and said we need to have a Zoom. We've got some announcements, and I asked my immediate supervisor. I said, it's rare to have a Saturday night phone call with your athletic director. And she let me know that there's a good chance we were going on a pause. And of course, I can tell you, you know, as everybody who's involved in softball at the college level, what we're putting in to make this safe, to effectively roll out the opportunity to play, between testing and quarantining and, taking care of any possible COVID positives. We are ultimately very cautious, but so we get on the call with the AD, and that was the case. The state was very concerned there's a new variant, which is not well known as far as the one thing they know about it is it's much more highly transmittable, 1.5 times more transmittable. And we had, there were, from what the stats were Saturday night, there are 200 cases in the country, and 20 of them were in the state of Michigan, and 5 were in our athletic department, and the UK variant. And that was how the state chose to deal with it. I can tell you it wasn't very popular amongst any of us. And how did it affect this? Well, we literally were not only shut down from practice for 2 full weeks, 14 days. And the way I've learned since, it's up to 14 days. Is it possible we could get out sooner? Well, we certainly hope so. And we're all in quarantine. The entire athletic department is in quarantine. So I can tell you that the most difficult thing is I've had a number of kids who literally, I had 4 kids who came out of quarantine on Saturday. They'd been in their 10-day quarantine, whether they had COVID or had been exposed. And they went right back in Saturday night. And I mean, it's tough. It's tough times. And we were able to go in today and get them items that they need because they're all training in their apartments and they're in their basements. We were able to drop exercise bikes off at some of the houses. One of the pitchers came in and brought the pitching mat and is going to set it up in her driveway. And we sent them home with balls and bats and Nerf balls and dumbbells, and they're going to train, and we're going to meet daily. And I said, you know, nobody writes the story of the hero who didn't go through adversity to become the hero. And if we're in adversity now, and how are we going to be the heroes? And, you know, we're just trying to inspire our kids that in the long term, hopefully this is the adversity of our season and the blip. But so many teams have been on pause, teams that haven't had much opportunity to practice, and everybody has been affected in some way, shape, or form. And we had an outstanding fall. We missed 2 days total with governor's orders that came in our last 2 days of practice. We practiced a lot and had an outstanding fall. So we started a week earlier than usual this year, and we're like, we can deal with this. We have great foundation. We have great work ethic, and we're just trying to keep our kids positive.
Yeah, I think that's the mental toll is what a lot of coaches worry about more than even just the physical, like you said, especially the ones that are in quarantine. And just, I mean, we all know we love this, that the kids love the sport and they want to play, but still when you get stopped and started and the worry about will you get stopped and started, as much as you love it, it still takes a toll no matter how excited you are to play. And that's, I think, what I'm hearing from every coach is the overriding feeling. You just want the kids to not get so burnt out by just the whole back and forth of it that it outweighs the love of being on the field. Is that the sense you're getting to, or is that what you're looking out for?
I have never in my 37 years sensed more of an appreciation for the opportunity to get to play, to be at practice every day. And we literally this fall, we went at it 6 days a week. And those kids would come in, they'd be dragging. They were tired and they didn't complain. They were happy. I mean, this is their time. And so I'm sensing that if nothing else, the affect that all this has had is, and it will have when we come back out, they're happy to get to practice. They'll do anything we ask them to do. And they've really refound their new love, their love of the game, because sometimes that get lost in all the other stuff. But the fact that they know it's they don't take it for granted. It has actually been joyful for me as a coach to be around a group that's so happy to be on the field, whether they're doing well or not doing well. And it's been a lot of fun.
It's, as we've seen from college football, college basketball, even, you know, some of the volleyball that's taking place now and restarting, and Big Ten is just starting, it's a bumpy ride for them. How do you see the softball season playing out? I know we have some hope on the horizon with the vaccine starting to get disseminated, but you know, that's going to be slow, where it's not going to get to everyone right away, especially this age group of kids, maybe not right away. Do you even take a guess on how the softball season may, since that's such a bad thing that we've all been doing, is just guessing lately?
Well, I think we know that it's going to be bumpy. I mean, I think we have to be prepared for it. And I can tell you, I woke up the first day of 2021 and thought, this isn't going to be like, oh, good, that's over. And I told my team, this is going to be very challenging. And sure enough, we're living through the first one. There's going to be kids that don't get to play that are positive or end up in quarantine. There's going to be teams that don't get to play games because we see it all the time. We saw it in football. We saw it in basketball. They got to take a week off. There's been teams that go into 7-day pauses when they have a too high of a percentage of COVID positives. It's going to affect the season, and the teams that can really roll with it and not let it become, I say, you can focus on what you don't have, or you can focus on what you do have. And we're definitely taking a next woman up approach. Every kid on the team needs to be ready to play any position at any time. And, you know, I had a pitcher at first base the other day. He was big, long, lanky. And I said, you know, you look pretty good over there. Don't be surprised to be in the game sometime. So, really, we have to be ready. It's not going to miss us. We're all going to be affected. And again, we got to stay cool, calm, and collected as coaches. And, we've got to deal the hope, as we like to say. We're here to deal hope, and everything's going to be okay.
Is it, are you under the, is it still going to be Big Ten only for everyone? Is that still what, is that definitive? Is that, nothing's going to change in that sense for the Big Ten conference only softball?
The Big Ten conference came out in the fall and basically stated that we were going to play conference only, and each sport went to work on creating their own schedule. And the Big Ten, you know, we typically play a 23-game season and then have a conference tournament, which includes 12 of the 14 members. We are going to play a 44-game. Our goal is to play a 44-game schedule, knowing that I'm sure not everybody will play the same number of games. Some teams will play more games than others. And we want to play. We want to play as many games as possible. And the coaches have worked really hard and really well together. And our number one interest has been to provide our student athletes with the opportunity to play the sport they love and represent their institution.
Any changes to that tournament structure, or is that going to be all teams invited now, or do we know?
Well, we voted against having the tournament because we weren't going to be able to take all, at least 12 of the 14. And we really felt we needed that weekend for everybody to get four games in, as opposed to only two teams getting up to three games, and, you know, up to six teams only getting one game and sitting out another eight of the other teams. Like, we felt we wanted everybody to get to play as many games as possible.
That's what I mean. I think that, and even in basketball, we're starting to see, like, are the tournaments even going to be worth it this year, like, for conference? And, you know, you're almost afraid, like, if you play it too, that you get something and then you can't, the NCAA starts so quick up next the week after. So it's interesting to see how it's, I think flexibility is the key word this year for everyone, fluid and flexible.
Those are two words I actually can't wait to discard for the rest of my life. Fluid, yeah. Everything's fluid, but honestly, it really speaks to how we as the coaches have to set the tone for our team every day and to keep them okay with the unknowns and the uncertainties that go with our season. These kids have been programmed for a long time to have everything in their life planned out, and everything they do. And, you know, we don't have our schedule set, and we're hope that we're closing in as a conference, but I say, hey, we don't know. And we say that a lot, and we say it with a smile on our face. And we don't know who we play. We don't know when we play. We don't know where we play. We only care that we're getting ready to play. And when it's time to play, we're going to need to be ready to play. And, you know, we have to set how they think about it and quell all the influences they have. We're going to get to play. We're going to make the best of it.
And one other word I'm sure you want to get rid of but that part of your lengthy career, unprecedented, would probably be best to describe this season for you, at least, you know, last season and this season with COVID. But you're still back, you know, I mean, some coaches might've been like, all right, that's it. I'm just going to leave now. Like, I don't want to deal with this. The longevity and the wins, it says it all, but why have you remained, Coach? Why have you decided that this is something that you want to, that you're still so passionate about, that you want to be out there every day with these kids?
You know, the beauty of being in it for a really long time is you keep, I always said, I never say, wow, I've seen it all, because every year you see something new. And, honestly, I still love being in the dugout. I still love working with 18 to 22-year-olds, and I love being in the dugout. I love game day. I love the thrill of the thought of being in a super regional. Just, I get goosebumps thinking about it. And at my age and longevity, I can really enjoy it. And I said this in 2016 when we went back to the World Series and we'd finished second in 2015. And I said, I'd never enjoyed it more. I was like a little kid. And I went there with no worries of, well, we have to win it or we have to prove something. Or I just was really happy. And so I've been able to enjoy this part of my career. I don't feel the pressure of anything. I get to enjoy what I love to do. And honestly, I get to dish off all the stuff I don't like to do. So when you're my age, you got a lot of great staff that take care of that stuff. So I'm just feel like I'm pretty lucky.
How has the sport, evolved or changed? I mean, you've been at Michigan your whole, and people might not know, obviously you were a Michigan Stater, right? That rivalry for you is very interesting, but how has the sport evolved or changed? I mean, for good and bad over your years. I mean, you've seen it all pretty much.
Well, I without a doubt, the biggest impact our sport is TV. I mean, once we got on TV and we talked for years that we got to get to TV, it made us so viable as a sport across the land. And people watch us and they love us. And we've got fans everywhere. And ESPN is one of our biggest fans. And I mean, that has just been a whirlwind of, excitement to be on TV. How's it grown? I mean, the sport has gotten better because we have so much more focus on the sport. And as a head coach, I always talk about my first couple of years, which were a lot of years, actually. But I had an assistant coach that showed up. She had a full-time job. She'd come and help me hit fungos. And I had to plan the practice. I had to do all the recruiting. I had to do all the paperwork. I mean, I had to do everything. And now I have a director of ops and I have a video person. I have two full-time assistants. I have a grad manager. I have a volunteer coach. And, we have a staff and we have so many more people in the department who now care about us as women and women sports. We've become viable. And with all that makes you a lot busier, they'll come to find out, even though I have people that do so much of the things I used to do all of. But I got a lot of spokes in my wheel, and every day I've got to pay attention to every one of them. So I feel like professionally, we as head coaches now have never been more pulled in so many directions every day. So we really need to have great staff and great assistant coaches who can keep our eye on the ball, keep our eye on our pitching, keep our eye on our recruiting, and keep me on task. And, it's been a great profession to be a part of and to grow with.
On that note, what do you do to kind of unwind or get away or just take like a mental break for yourself? Because it is very, you have so many people counting on you and you do need that time for yourself. What do you do? What keeps you, keeps your engines going outside of softball?
Well, what keeps me young, honestly, is I think if I ever give advice to anybody, is make sure that you make time for yourself. And I can tell you that even for many years, after a weekend where we get dumped and lose 3 or 4, if I did one thing, I would Monday get away. And I had to get away. I had to get away from myself. And whether it's go in the woods with my dog, ride my bike for 20 miles, I would just absolutely detach so I could come back with a better point of view, a better attitude, and be refreshed for my student athletes and for my own, sanity. But we have to take care of ourselves. And I read an article recently how coaches are I forget what they called it, but like we're in the self-care, flunkies, because the last people we tend to take care of is ourselves. But you need to be your best self so you can be there for your student athletes. And time away doing what you love. And I love to be outdoors and I love Lake Michigan and I love to golf. I have a ton of interests. Sometimes I don't have dates. Some days I don't have time to work, but I definitely pursue my interests and like to think that I really do believe that you have to have balance in your life. I want my staff to Monday mornings, no matter what, I don't want them in during the season. I need them to rest, recover. They need to spend time with their families. And, there's more to life than what we're doing. And if there's one thing that has become really clear during this pandemic is we've all spent so much more time at home, is if you'd have told me when we got our first shut-in, we were sheltered in for 3 weeks, and I thought, I've got to stay home for 3 weeks. And I just laugh about that now. I've been home largely for 9 or 10 months, and I didn't realize how much I liked being at home and liked working from home. And, you know, there's a lot we can do from home, but, you know, I still look forward to getting in the dugout and, you know, getting on the field against an opponent.
Yeah, I know we've spoken a few times where you've been admiring the view from your, I think with a cup of coffee, you've said, and I've always been kind of like, I need to see that view at some point from your house somewhere. It sounds like it's a beautiful view.
Well, I've got a beautiful barn across the street that in the morning as the sun hits it, it's just, I sit in the front room, I have a little library, and I like to get up in the morning and sit and relax and have my coffee and get my thoughts for the day and read. I like to read the news, love to read politics. And then I like to get my thoughts together for practice. So what are we going to do today? And, you know, love to walk my dog. And, you know, so I like my mornings for myself, and it helps me get in. And then I give it up. It's not about myself anymore.
You've got a lot to read about if you're reading about politics a lot, Coach.
Yes, it's been quite a time. I've never been more immersed in it. And, you know, really, It's been one of the things that I want us all to realize that we impact our student athletes. And it's not for me to inflict my political views, obviously, but the fact that I've never been more adamant that you have to use your vote, your right to vote, and you have to understand the issues. And, you know, kids are so largely impacted by their parents' views. I said, study your own issues. And because all these, the things you vote for impact you. And I feel really strongly that this generation of kids that we're coaching right now, they are the ticket to our future. And, you know, I'm just an old lady, you know, I'll be on Social Security one of these days and golfing all the time. But this is where I think activism, to watch it this summer and to listen to all my kids voted. We need to be active. All of us need to be active in the political process. It's our world. We're the ones who live in it.
Yeah, it's been very inspiring to see the athletes. I mean, they always had their voice, but to actually be able to use it and people listen and to find it at a stronger level than ever before. And like you said, it's as long as you're educated about it and you take the time and really do the work and not just say stuff because it sounds great, which a lot of these athletes do, are just so well and so well informed that it's been really cool to see that the activism. And as you said, no matter what side you come from, just make sure that you come from it genuinely and you come from it with a point of view that's educated.
Well, I think we really have a unique platform. And when you're a student athlete on the University of Michigan softball team, the entire Ann Arbor community knows who you are. And so you always have to take to heart what your platform is and how you use it, because you need to use it wisely and productively. And you always do represent the Block M, but everybody has a right to represent their personal views. As long as you're always respectful that it doesn't have to be imposed on everybody.
Yeah.
So I have enjoyed watching the activism that came with this summer. And I hope that we continue on that, because it does affect the student athletes and social injustice, racial injustice, any injustice. And as I quote Martin Luther King, an injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. And we are all affected by it. And it's real.
A little bit of a lighter note here, because we've seen recently in college basketball, women's college basketball, if anyone's a fan, Pat Summitt, the legend that is, who you, when you were telling that story, reminded me of how she used to drive the van and wash the uniforms. And, you know, that's kind of her. Yeah. Kind of was doing the same things you were doing. It's just indoor sport. Recently, you know, her career wins record was passed by Tara Vanderveer at Stanford and Gina Auriemma, her, you know, best buddy over there at UConn. So we, you know, you and Mike Candre over at Arizona, you're going back and forth chasing each other, just like them now, just like Tara and Gina will be. How has it been? I mean, I know coaches, you know, you're not obsessed about it. You're not focused on it every day and checking the tabulations, but how do you feel about that record and kind of the relationship between you two? And do you guys give each other a little grief over it at all when you see each other?
Honestly, between the two of us, I don't think we've ever even thought of it. I can tell you that Mike is one of the most respectful guys, and he's always treated me so well. I got a chance to work with him in the 2005 to 2008 USA pool. And I signed up because I wanted a chance to get to be in his camp and learn from him. And he treats the game with such respect. He treats all of his opponents with respect. And he's been nothing but a big fan of mine. And I can only just say the same for him. He's a gift to our game. And no matter what our records are, keep in mind, Mike has 8 national championships. And, you know, so I give him the GOAT status no matter what.
Well, you're both great. And we hope that this record goes like to unimaginable levels between you two for a few more years. That would be awesome. Last quick two things. I would love to just kind of get your own softball career. What do you remember from that? And kind of, do you still anything that you still, you know, tell your, like, brag about with your kids? Or how did you get into softball originally? Like, what got you as a player immersed in the sport?
Oh man. Well, I could tell you that I got into this sport because I was in any sport that was being played. I mean, I grew up in a kind of suburbia, Lansing, Michigan, which is why I'm a Spartan. And we had a swamp in my backyard that we used to play ice hockey. We had a basketball court, which we used to shovel off and play basketball. And a gravel pit, which we used to go down there and just get in trouble. And we played football every afternoon in the fall. And I played all sports. But keep in mind, as I got older, and I was a tomboy, I had 3 brothers and 2 sisters, and I was one of the boys, so to speak. But then I got to that awkward age, which we call teenager, and all of a sudden I wasn't quite so welcome in the boys' camp. I didn't want some girl there, especially because I could, you know, compete with a lot of them. And I didn't really have anywhere to go because in the late 60s and mid 70s, we didn't have much structured athletics for girls. And I never played high school softball. We didn't have it. All right. And I'd played finally my senior year in high school. We had a varsity basketball tournament, you know, a state tournament for girls basketball. So I finally became a varsity athlete my senior year in basketball. But I got into the sport because I played pickup sandlot, and I got on a church league team when I was, I think, I don't know how old I was, but my dad made me quit playing because our catcher kept getting in fights. And so he didn't think a church league team should have, you know, girls fighting. And then, but I ended up I used to follow the Lansing Laurels. They were a semi-professional women's team in Lansing, traveled the country. They would fill Ranny Park with 3,000 people on some Friday nights. And they were local celebrities. And so we used to go. My dad used to take us. My best friend's dad used to take my best friend and I. And I went to one of their local tryouts. And I made their farm team, the Lansing Lassies. I made the team. And by the second year, I got moved up to the Laurels. And then a couple years later, I went on to Michigan State. And the reason I wanted to go to Michigan State, because they were so good in softball and they were good in everything. And, you know, I wanted to be an athlete. And my first year at Michigan State, we drove a bus to Omaha, Nebraska, and we won the Women's College World Series at Dill Field in Omaha. And, you know, I take my kids up to play at Michigan State, and they have a big plaque on the stadium. It's got my name on it. And one of my favorite stories is Amanda Chittister, who's on the Olympic team right now. And we took them up there, and she was a freshman. And I always showed them the plaque. And, you know, I like to talk smack with my kids. And she looked at me. She said, "I didn't know you played softball." And we just laughed because she said, "Well, you only ever talk about your basketball days." So, but, you know, that's how I got into it. And I largely got into it because in my basketball career in high school and my softball career with the Lansing Laurels, I had 2 really, really strong women role models. My high school basketball coach and my summer softball coach, Kay Purvis, who taught me that it's okay to be a strong woman, and it's okay to play sports in a time when people called you a lot of names because you were a tomboy. I mean, tomboy wasn't exactly you know, a compliment. And, you know, they shaped my life, honestly. So that's really how I got into it.
That's great. That's a great story. That is a perfect way to end this, because that's very, very inspiring. And I didn't know the Lansing Lassies. That's a heck of a name. I mean,
how about that?
That's a very good, that's a totally like that. Those touring team names, I can see that, the Lansing Lassie. So that was kind of like the farm team to the Laurels.
We were the farm team, and we played in our own schedule, and, you know, we'd go watch the Laurels, and the Laurels were the big sisters, and they were the big dogs. And the next year, the coach, Kay Purvis, wanted me to move up. And I, you know what, I didn't want to move up. I was really happy. I was having fun. It was my first time in a really organized team of any type. And I thought, well, I'm not going to get to play if I go with the big dogs. And I was a bit intimidated. And I realized I didn't really have a choice, because that's the purpose of the farm league, is to move you up. And I did. And it worked out. And it all worked out. And the greatest experience of my life, you know, one of my many great experiences was playing in that organization, traveling the country, playing in national tournaments, playing against so many of the Hall of Famers that are ahead of my time. And, you know, helped shape who I became as a coach. Kay totally shaped who I became as a coach.
That's tremendous. That is awesome. We'll definitely thank gosh for Kay, because we've got you paying it forward now, right? The same thing. We'll have a coach on in a few years, God willing, and she'll say the same thing about you. She'll probably be a Michigan alum. So
that'll be my greatest honor.
Well, we really appreciate it, Coach. We've taken so much of your time, but it's one that we've wanted to have even before the news, and we'd love to have you back at D1 Softball Podcast. You're welcome anytime. I know it's going to start getting busier, fingers crossed, once you're out of this 14 or hopefully less day pause. Yeah. But thank you so much. We enjoyed it, and we're looking forward to the season starting at some time.
So am I, and so are all my kids. So stay tuned, and I appreciate your time as well. Thanks for all you do.
All right, we're going to head out, and Ree is going to interview Hutch. What a great interview. Hutch is such a legend, that woman. She's kind of done it all, and it's just great to hear from her, her experience now and her stories just being in the sporting world.
I honestly could sit there. I probably could have done 3 hours with Hutch, and we ended up talking even after for another 40 minutes or something. She's just, her perspective, her passion, her experience, just all her things she's done and experienced in, whether her own career or playing and then coaching, just a wealth of knowledge, and someone so much more than just softball too. She has an interest in so many things, and just really got a kick out of listening to her own career with like the Lansing Lassies. That name just jumped out to me. And kind of her tomboy, you know, her dad forbidding her to play for a while because the church games were getting too dirty. So he didn't want her to play in the church games. So it's just funny. And like I said, I know we'll have her back. It's a very serious issue over there, obviously, that we had her on for, but didn't want to keep it strictly to that because she's one that we were hoping to have on anyways. But I know we'll have her on many more times, you know, permitting she can fit us into her schedule, because that woman's always doing something for someone. Just a great asset to our game, and really always cringe, praying she sticks around as long as possible, because we at the sport benefits the longer she's in it.
Yeah. So that is it for episode 22. Special thanks for Hutch for joining us. Like, subscribe on Facebook, Instagram, and get that subscription on d1softball.com. Right now we're running a 20% off special, so make sure you get that before season starts. And Ree, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, no, what you said, because I think we're starting to, people are subscribing now. They're getting excited for softball season. So you're going to want to get yours, because we've seen a lot of people start to click and subscribe, which is awesome, because we really appreciate it. We don't take it for granted. We want to bring you more sport of softball. The only way we can do that is through subscription. So we're eternally grateful for those that have, and those that haven't. Yeah, head to the site and do it, because it's going to, once that scoreboard gets flipping, it's going to be a fun season. You're going to want to check in for everything.
Yes, and we've got a big announcement on February 1st, so stay tuned. We've got a new team member joining D1 Softball. We will announce that on February 1st. So like, subscribe, and we will see you next week on the D1 Softball Podcast.